We are in the book of Judges, but we need to take a little side trip over to the book of Ruth at this point. Yesterday, I was talking to you about the death of the tyrant Abimelech and the rise of the two judges in his place on the east and west sides of the Jordan Valley. Now, I'm always at a quandary to know exactly where to put the book of Ruth in this history, because it appears that it's happening during the time of the judges, but yet during a time when there is sin in the land and there is judgment coming from God upon the people of Israel. And so I would place it somewhere probably toward the tail end of Gideon's life, or maybe during the time of Abimelech, or maybe toward the beginning of the judgeship of Tola and Yair. And the reason for that is because there is a famine that is taking place in and around Bethlehem as the story begins, but God removes that famine at the climax of the story of Ruth. I'm placing this somewhere in the 1100s BC. This is what the book of Ruth tells us. Starting at chapter 1, verse 1. In the days when the judges ruled, there was a famine in the land. And as I already mentioned, famines came in particular because of the failure of the Israelis to live by the covenant. This is part of the Deuteronomic warning, blessing and cursing, that as long as they live by the covenant, God would bless their harvests, make sure they had plenty of water. But if they went against the covenant, he would dry the land up and their crops would suffer. So this must be during one of those times of judgment. There was a man of Bethlehem in Judah who went to sojourn in the country of Moab, both he, his wife, and his two sons. The name of the man was Elimelech, and the name of his wife, Naomi, and the names of his two sons were Mahlon and Chilion. They were Ephrathites, which is just a name for the region around Bethlehem, from Bethlehem in Judah. And they went into the country of Moab and remained there. So these guys are from the tribe of Judah, and they receive their inheritance in the region of Ephrathah, the city of Bethlehem, way back at the time of Joshua. And so this is a descendant of one of those families that settled that region. His name is interesting because of the story we just finished telling. His name is Elimelech, which means my God is king. Whereas the story we just finished, we had the tyrant Abimelech, whose name meant my dad is king. And so that was a reference back to Gideon. So this guy was raised by someone who understood who the real king of Israel is. And this is also important because of the theme verse that pops up in the book of Judges. There was no king in Israel in those days, and everyone did as they saw fit in their own eyes. So they're not identifying God as the true king of Israel, and that's what's bringing judgment upon them. So they end up abandoning their inherited farm at Bethlehem and running off to Moab on the other side of the Salt Sea or the Dead Sea, because over there, there's apparently food. Now, it wouldn't have been very pleasant for them because they would have been outsiders. They would have been foreigners living in a foreign land. and they would have probably got the bottom tier jobs and would have had a hard time paying for things. But evidently, it was a better existence there than starving to death back at the homestead in Bethlehem. Verse number 3. But Elimelech, the husband of Naomi, died, and she was left with her two sons. So dad dies, and mom is now in a foreign land with two teenage sons trying to make ends meet, and it must have been a really tough time. But these boys, grow up to marriageable age. So they probably moved, since we know they're there for about 10 years total, they probably moved to Moab when they were in their early teens. And then, right before the story shifts back to Bethlehem, these two boys are in their later teens and get married to Moabite women. Verse 4. These took Moabite wives. The name of the one was Orpah, and the name of the other, Ruth. And they lived there about 10 years. Now that's a total, I think, from the time that Elimelech moved his family to Moab. And both Mahlon and Chilion died, so that the women were left without her two sons and her husband. And so I think this all happens very suddenly, shortly after the two boys get married to local women. They also die, and now we've got three widows living in the same house, trying to figure out how to make ends meet. There doesn't seem to be any kids. That's one of the reasons I think that the marriages must have happened shortly before the two men died. And this is when Naomi finds out that things have changed back in Bethlehem from 10 years earlier. Verse number 6. Then she arose with her daughters-in-law to return from the country of Moab, for she had heard in the fields of Moab that he who is had visited his people and given them food. All right, now, so let me go with my explanation again, is where I think this might fit into the chronology of the period of the judges we've been looking at. We know that the people of Israel behaved themselves for the most part as long as they had a strong leader. But as that leader aged and came close to dying, they started getting involved in more and more sin, and God started bringing judgment. So I believe that we're probably talking about this famine kicking off in the latter years of Gideon. And it continued through the 3 years of Abimelech the tyrant. And then once he's dead, Tola and Yair both start leading on the east side and the west side of the Jordan. And they seem to be strong enough judges for God that the people behave themselves again. And so God starts bringing the blessing back to the land. And so that's where I think, probably a few years into the time of Tola, that we see the story of Ruth and Naomi coming to Bethlehem. Because here it says that God was the one that ended the famine in Bethlehem. So Naomi gets word of this. So verse 7, she set out from the place where she was with her two daughters-in-law, and they went on their way to return to the land of Judah, probably going around the north shore of the sea, the Salt Sea or the Dead Sea. But Naomi said to her two daughters-in-law, Go, return each of you to her mother's house. May he who is deal kindly with you as you have dealt with the dead and with me. So she likes these two women. She appreciates that they treated her sons right. Even in their death, they treated them with respect. But now she's putting a blessing upon them to go back to their old lives. Because we'll discover this as the story progresses. Naomi is in the throes of absolute depression. And she basically just wants to go back to Bethlehem and die there, alone and miserable. So she puts a blessing on them to try to convince them to leave her alone. Verse number 9, he who is, grant that you may find rest, each of you in the house of her husband. So I hope you find a new husband. And then she kissed them, and they lifted up their voices, and they wept. They said to her, no, we're going to return with you to your people. But Naomi said, turn back, my daughters. Why will you go with me? Have I yet sons in my womb that they may become your husbands? Now, what's that a reference to? That's the a reference to the law, the tradition of levirate marriage, which is just a fancy way of saying family marriage. So that if a man dies without having any children with his wife, then the typical procedure was for that wife, that widow, to get married to the next eligible brother in that family. And the reason for this is because it keeps the inheritance intact. It keeps it all in the family. If there's not a brother that's eligible, then a cousin will do. So that's the idea. So she says, come on, you don't expect that I'm going to have any more kids that'll grow up and become your husbands. That'd be ridiculous. You need to go find your own husbands. Verse 12, turn back, my daughters, go your way, for I am too old to have a husband. If I should say that I have hope, even if I should have a husband this night and would bear sons, would you therefore wait till they were grown? Would you therefore refrain from marrying? No, my daughters, for it is exceedingly bitter to me for your sake that the hand of he who is has gone against me. So she goes, no, you guys need to just stay here. Stay here in Moab, find yourself a young Moab boy, get married, have kids, be happy. But for me, God's treated me with great bitterness, and I'm going to go home alone. So they lifted up their voices, and they wept again. And Orpah kissed her mother-in-law. So she basically says goodbye, and she leaves the story, and we don't hear any more about her. And I really think this is kind of sad, because we know that the Moabites were a twisted pagan society that had horrible worship practices for their supposed god, Chemosh, that expected them to offer baby sacrifices on a regular basis. So Naomi is basically letting Orpah go back into a society that is not likely to bring her into right relationship with the God of the universe. And that's a sad part of this story that I think we need to acknowledge. But Ruth, thankfully, clung to her. Ruth wants to quit being a Moabite. She wants to be an Israeli. And that comes out in what happens next, verse 15. She said, that is, Naomi said to her, see, your sister-in-law has gone back to her people and to her gods. See, that's the really sad part. Return after your sister-in-law. But Ruth said, do not urge me to leave you, or to return from following you. For where you will go, I will go. Where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people, your God, my God." So whatever else happened during this 10 years that Elimelech and his family lived in Moab, it impacted positively on Ruth, because she is a convert to the true faith. She wants to abandon her Moabite roots, her family's devotion to a paganized god. She wants to embrace Israel as her nation and He who is as her God. She even says this, verse 17, "Where you die, I will die, and there will I be buried." So I want to be your family member, and I want to be buried in your family graves. Wherever you go, that's where I'm going. And when Naomi saw that she was determined to go with her, she said no more. So she gave up, because Ruth was adamant, "I am not going back to Moab. I'm coming to Bethlehem." And this is good news for her and good news for us. Verse 19, "So the two of them went on until they came to Bethlehem." Now, Bethlehem is about 4 or 5 miles south of the Temple Mount, where the Temple Mount is today. And we always think about it as the birthplace of Jesus, especially since we're not too far past the Christmas season right now. But this is long before any of those prophecies or stories happened. Right now, Bethlehem is just another community in the hills of Judea where they grow grain and where they raise sheep and try to live their daily lives, hopefully in a way that is in compliance with the covenant. So they came to Bethlehem, and when they did so, the whole town was stirred because of them. And the women said, "Is this Naomi?" See, it's been 10 years since Elimelech and Naomi abandoned their farm and just disappeared. Apparently, nobody even knew where they went. Just gone. And so now she's back all by herself. And they're shocked by this. "Is this Naomi?" And she said, "Don't call me Naomi." See, in Hebrew, Naomi means pleasant, as in a pleasant situation. So she says, "Don't call me pleasant. Call me Mara." Because Mara in Hebrew means bitter. So don't call me pleasant, call me bitter. For Shaddai, the Almighty, has dealt very bitterly with me. I went away full, and he who is has brought me back empty. Why call me pleasant when he who is has testified against me, and the Almighty, or Shaddai, has brought calamity upon me?" So this is the verse where you can see very clearly. Naomi is a bitter woman. She is a woman very depressed, a woman blaming God for all the horrible things that have happened to her, the famine, the death of her husband, the death of her two boys, and now, as we'll discover, the loss of her family farm, because all of that stuff has gone wild in the 10 years since she's been gone, and it's just not going to be something that she can take care of. But thankfully, God is going to change her bitterness back into pleasantness before this story is over. Verse 22. So Naomi returned, and Ruth, the Moabite, her daughter-in-law, with her, who returned from the country of Moab, and they came to Bethlehem at the beginning of barley harvest. So the barley ripens right at the beginning of the first month of the Jewish year in the spring. In fact, the first fruits that are cut and waved before the presence of God on the first day after the Sabbath that falls during Passover week, that is a barley harvest sheaf. And the barley harvest officially begins right at the time of Passover. That is Tuesday after the Monday that falls during Passover week is the first time that the harvesters can officially start harvesting the barley harvest. So they are arriving shortly after Passover, perhaps the week after Passover. And they are going to have to depend upon gleanings from the barley harvest if they're going to get through the next year until perhaps they can get the farm back up running again. I have this picture in my mind that they came back to an abandoned farmhouse that had been neglected for 10 years. And the fields that go with that that house have all been overrun by weeds. Or it's possible, not guaranteed, but it's possible that the neighbors, knowing that the fields had been abandoned, had simply confiscated them for themselves, started using them for their own purposes. That would have been illegal, but not surprising, huh? All right, chapter number 2. Now, Naomi had a relative of her husband, a worthy man of the clan of Elimelech, whose name was Boaz. Now, Boaz's name means in strength. And this guy, let me tell you a little bit about him based on the information that comes up later. He is apparently of that same generation as Elimelech and Naomi. So he's older than Ruth would be by probably a couple of decades. But he has apparently never married. There is nothing in the story anywhere that indicates he's ever been married or has any children of his own. And the question has to automatically be asked, why wouldn't a guy of this age be married? And apparently there's just something about him, maybe his shyness, maybe he isn't all that good looking. Maybe he's got other issues, social clumsiness that makes it where he never found someone to spend his life with. But we do know he's a good man. He is a man devoted to God. And he's also a man that has put a lot of energy into building up his own holdings, his fields. So he has a whole bunch of fields full of grain that are now starting to be harvested. And so this guy comes into the story next. Verse 2, Ruth, the Moabite, said to Naomi, "Let me go to the field and glean among the ears of grain after him in whose sight I find favor." And she said to her, "Go, my daughter." So she went out and went and gleaned in the field after the reapers, and she happened to come to the part of the field belonging to Boaz, who was of the clan of Elimelech. Now we need to get back to our understanding of God's social security program for the poor. Every person that had property in Israel was effectively living on the land of God. They were working it and therefore could harvest the grain for their own use, 10% of which automatically went to God, and the 90% of it they kept for themselves. But the fields officially belonged to God. And God said, I want you to leave a perimeter around every one of your planted fields for that grain there to belong to the poor, so that when harvest time comes, poor people can go and harvest in those areas. God also said, whenever you harvest a field, when you bundle up the little sheaves of grain, and the way that this happened is you'd grab a handful of stalks of grain, you'd whack it off with a sharp object like a sickle, and then you'd take one of those strands, or maybe a couple of those strands, and wrap it around and tie it in place so that you had a little handful-sized sheaf, and then you'd throw that over in a pile. Well, if you dropped any stalks to the ground, or heads of grain broke off and dropped to the ground, even seeds of grain that dropped off and fell to the ground, you were not supposed to pick those up. Those automatically belong to the poor people as well. And then when you loaded up your transport of the grain sheaves, that is probably a wheelbarrow or some sort of cart, and took it out of the field, if you left anything or anything fell off the cart or off the wheelbarrow, you had to leave it on the ground as well for the poor people. So when harvest time comes, you've got the official harvesters that are out there working, and then you've got all the poor people surrounding them, getting those gleanings, getting those drop things, and cutting the grain at the edge of the field for themselves. That's where Ruth has gone in order to get something for herself and Naomi to live off of and perhaps save up for in the coming year that's ahead of them.